Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing key market themes and a number of global equities today. And to do that, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Morning, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we're looking at a market here today in London, which is slightly weaker on the ongoing tragedies that are being discovered in Ukraine and the reaction from the West in terms of more sanctions. And there will be an argument that they haven't yet gone far enough. There's obviously been talk about targeting possibly the oil and gas supplies. But it's a difficult situation because that would, of course, cripple the Russian economy. But at the same time, that would cause severe financial difficulties for particularly many European countries, including ourselves. So we are seeing some weakness out there in the market today. In addition, there has been some more rumblings from the Federal Reserve and some comments out this week that suggest that they are indeed targeting a number of interest rate hikes this year, has been the speculation so far from many investment bank analysts. There could be up to 200 basis points. We're starting to talk now about a 50 basis point hike in upcoming meetings. That would be a sharp move. Of course, the market doesn't like the tighter monetary conditions and possibility of that tightening forward. So we're seeing some weakness out there today in markets, Alan. But you know, these are topics that we've discussed in some detail on the podcast in recent weeks, and nothing's really sort of too much changed there. You know, obviously trading headline to headline at the moment in markets. So I would expect that to continue for the foreseeable future until we see, you know, any real changes on the ground in Ukraine. And if we see any changes in the financial conditions, particularly looking at inflation. So it's set to be a theme for the coming months. So, Alan, now let's move on to the stocks that we're going to discuss today. First of which is Twitter. Has just gained, Alan, a new substantial shareholder in Elon Musk. Interesting move in the share price of Twitter earlier on this week. But it does raise the question, of course, Elon Musk, everything he touches seems to turn to gold. Do you think that's the case with Twitter?
I think it almost certainly is, John. I mean, Twitter, of course, Elon Musk is campaigning. Of course, he put a very, cleverly worded tweet. He put a tweet up there, a poll, asking his followers whether Twitter should have an edit button. And of course, do you think Twitter should have an edit button? YSE or ON, yes or no? So, of course, deliberate spelling mistakes designed to highlight the issue. And, it's overwhelmingly in favour. And I think all of us who use Twitter actively, of course, I know you do with the UK Investor Channels, John, and we do with Brand Communications and Novus Communications. And, of course, it is incredibly frustrating because you're trying to cram everything into a small message, get it out, and then there's a spelling error. And by the time it's out, somebody's already shared it or retweeted it, so you can't take it down. So an edit button, I think, would be a great idea. Of course, the Elon Musk getting involved, next question is he going to launch a takeover? Does Elon Musk want to sort of build his shareholding up and launch an outright takeover? Speculation's going to run rife about this. But, of course, Twitter is the great platform for disseminating information fast and quickly and getting information out there fast and quickly. Probably the edit issue is one of the few areas where I think everyone universally would say, yeah, it would be good to do that. And I saw a suggestion for some this morning that, of course, edits would have to be logged, but you could have an edit button that would be live, say, for 3 or 4 minutes after the tweet goes out, which enables those that do just put a genuine typo in to make the correction, and then of course the edit function goes away. So I agree with what he's saying, but of course it's great when Elon Musk turns his attention to anything in the markets. It's always with many, many noughts on the end. So his involvement always signals a seismic move in the market somewhere. And of course this is great for the technology sector in general, because speculators will be looking at other platforms that offer social media platforms and speculating, well, he's now taken 9% of Twitter. Will Elon move on and build his holdings up in other platforms? All remains to be seen, of course.
Indeed. I mean, one thing that's particularly interesting about Twitter is that it never was, you know, as highly thought of as the FANGs, you know, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix and Google, of course. You know, Facebook have changed its name to Meta now, and Google's now known as Alphabet. It never quite got into that league of being, a sort of a multi-billion dollar market cap. And of course, it's worth about $40 billion compared to Facebook, worth $600 billion. Billion in terms of market cap. I mean, do you think that there is a possibility that Elon Musk comes in targeting, moving Twitter into that sort of league? Or do you think it's, there's an element of a sort of passion investment? We all know that he likes to tweet, and it's somewhat aching to somebody buying a Premier League football club that they support. It's a passion investment, a bit of fun to some extent.
I think it's probably a bit of both. I mean, he sees what impact his tweets make on markets. And I mean, every time he tweets something about an entity that's listed, of course, it's almost like market manipulation. He's got an opinion. And therefore, up goes the price. The same has happened with Twitter, but he's bought into the company. And of course, that's an inevitable byproduct of about the biggest hitter in the marketplace getting involved. But I think he does care about how his views are represented out there and the opportunities that the platforms provide. Is it a bit of fun? Possibly, but I think, with an eye to the future, he wants to make sure that he's got, he does have a substantial stake in all of the leading platforms. So, as I said earlier, this could well lead to speculation across other social media platforms that perhaps Musk is trying to build up a coordinated position across a number of platforms in order that he can express his views instantly and govern global opinion. The irony is that he seemingly wields so much more power than the presence of some of these the so-called superpowers out there, because every time he says something, it moves markets and moves worlds literally. But certainly, I think it's his involvement is good for the sector. It'll drive the technology space higher, so obviously technology stocks will reap some benefit from that along the way.
Indeed, and it will be interesting to see whether we see the return of Donald Trump to Twitter with Elon Musk's involvement. So yeah, interesting stock to watch going forward as we hear more from Elon Musk and his plans for Twitter.
Interesting to look at the way the stock has come back too. So it's down nearly 24% over the past year. But of course, since Elon Musk's involvement, he obviously sees a value opportunity with the stock down where it is. And the shares have of course bounced back substantially over the past few days.
Yes, indeed. I mean, one thing I would note, looking at quarterly reports from Twitter over the past year, I think it was sort of Q1 of last year, they were only generating about $1 billion in revenue for the quarter. The most recent quarter, that's increased by 50% to around $1.5 billion. So internally, he might see something going there as a business and an opportunity there. Because it seems as Twitter, as a company, is focusing more on the revenue side of things, and obviously that's going to transpire into earnings, which has its own attractions for somebody like Elon Musk if he can add his own views to the company and how things could turn around. So that's sort of looking at the data there, and there seems to be growth within Twitter as a business, so I'm sure that's something he wants to push forward as well. So Alan, we're going to move on now to the next company we're going to discuss today, and it's one that regular listeners to the podcast will be familiar with, because one of the members of the board now in Sapan was on the podcast not too long ago, and they actually presented us our metals and mining conference back in in February. It's Silverin Metals. At the time, we were looking at a share price that was around sort of 20, 23, 24p. Looking at where it is now, we're trading comfortably above that 40p level, and it traded at about 50p and above yesterday. And that was on some pretty dramatic news and game-changing news from them in terms of their Castilla titanium rutile project in Malawi. Alan, now they have the world's largest, according to the most recent resource estimate, titanium rutile asset in the world. But what else came along with that announcement yesterday, Alan?
Well, it's a sea change announcement. And I know, you know, Sapan, and I know you've been speaking to him too, John, and Sapan has been very excited and enthused by the prospects for the company. And I was talking to him probably over a year ago about Sovereign Metals, and you know, he was very bullish about the prospects and talking about rutile. And of course, you know, that's the thing, when you talk about rutile, you're often, more often than not, just get a blank stare, because people don't really understand what it is. But it is, of course, the primary source for titanium. You know, it's 95% of rutile is titanium dioxide, and of course that that's the metal that or that's the mineral that will that provides pigment for paint. It provides titanium for aerospace, for clean tech industry, for optics, just an absolutely nebulous range of solutions. And there is a well documented shortage of rutile or natural rutile production facilities in the world. And what happened yesterday, of course, Sovereign Metals confirmed that the Cassia rutile project that covers a huge area about the size of Bristol. Initially, the mineral resource estimate was based on 45 square kilometers, and then the updated estimate was based on 165 square kilometers, and the asset there now stands at 1.8 billion tons, which dwarfs literally the other producers of rutile in the world. And two of the key producers, one of them is of course Sierra Rutile in Sierra Leone, that has an asset of 8.1 million tons. So it's just absolutely dwarfs Sierra Rutile in size, and that is the second largest rutile asset in the world. So of course, from here, we've got we're already seeing stories out there about aircraft manufacturers. Airbus, for example, announced on at the end of last week that they were looking for new sources of rutile, i.e. titanium, you know, to produce the new generation Airbus fleet that will be sold to airlines across the world. So you've got all of these factors, and yet the asset has to be developed. So there's a very strong case here for fast tracking it. The other factor is that, of course, the 1.8 billion tons of rutile is also joined by 23 million tons of graphite. So along with rutile at the asset, we also have graphite too, which of course, as we know, is a key component of the new generation battery metals industry. Graphite makes up approximately 40% of the weight of a lithium ion battery, so hugely important going forward. So these two combine, they're both in the same piece of ground in the center of Malawi. And of course, the great thing about the region is it's known as the warm heart of Africa. It's very easy to get the product out of the ground and to market. The production costs are very low in comparison. And from a standing start to develop this, as Dr. Julian Stevens said, in 2 years, just 2 years since initially identifying rutile in the ground there, is absolutely massive. So it's happened in 2 years. Given the shortage, I imagine there's every possibility or even probability that this asset will be fast-tracked for development very quickly indeed. And of course, the scale of the asset means it's going to be a life-changing process for a lot of the residents in the area in Malawi too. So it'll create employment, it'll create prosperity, and of course with the green merits of the production system that will be put in place there, the Kasia rutile project will be producing rutile with a carbon footprint some 35% improved over existing rutile production at the other projects, certainly the Sierra rutile project being a case in point. So it's hugely important, this. Obviously, we've seen a big move in the share price off the back of that, but that still gives the company a valuation of $340 million Australian dollars, which is about 140 million, 150 million sterling. So still well off the pace, really, in that regard. And I think if you look what's happened with other major discoveries like this, you know, I know we keep on referring back to the Greatland Gold Haveran asset, but that's a great comparison. It's a great benchmark to compare to in terms of what happened to the company when that discovery was made. The market capital of the company rose from some 25, 30 million up to, at one stage, 1.5 billion. So given that the size of this asset, I think there's every expectation this could do the same. So although we've seen this strong share price move, I think in terms of the development and the value that's going to be extracted from here and for shareholders, I think we're still right at the start.
Indeed. I mean, UK Investment Magazine put out a report very recently which looked into very basic comparisons against some of their peers. You obviously mentioned there the Sierra Leone asset, which is owned and operated by a company, Iluka Resources, listed in Australia. And we took results from the recent initial scoping study by Sovereign Metals. It's actually due to be updated now on the back of this resource. And you made some comparisons against the enterprise value. Obviously, with early stage mining companies, there's a lack of forecasted earnings and such like. So you can only really look at the resource and the scoping studies there. But in terms of comparisons and valuations for what we've now have in the ground in Kasia, that they were way off the mark on valuations. And that was even before we had this update there. So that's going to be something we're probably going to have to do a little bit more work on when we get the updated scoping study from Sovereign Metals, which is probably going to be due at some point this year. So, we shares trading there at 40p, comparisons made to some of their peers. And there aren't that many of their peers out there due to the scarcity of the asset there. There could be potential upside from here. So well worth a look and having an exploration around what titanium rutile is and actually the significance of it.
Indeed.
If you haven't heard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first step, I would say.
Also, a good point on the just on Sovereign there, the actual logistics as well of getting the stuff out of the ground and to market. I mentioned that. So the asset's near to the town of Lilongwe, and there's a metalled road down to what's known as the Nacala Logistics Corridor, which is a major road route all the way out to the deep water port at Nacala. So. So the cost per production, there's a very good table on the website that shows the net present value of the earlier mineral resource estimate and also the cost per production. And the low costs are partly due to the ease of getting the product out of the ground down the Nacala Logistics Corridor and, of course, to the deep water port at Nacala for shipping to the destinations.
Indeed, that is a particularly important point because, whether it's titanium rutile or any resource, you may have a great resource there, high grades and all the rest of it. But, if you don't have the infrastructure in place, that then becomes a very expensive project, which isn't the case with what we're seeing at Sovereign Metals, as you just outlined there, particularly low cost extraction and then already in place infrastructure makes the economics of the project that much better. So we've had a busy year so far from Sovereign Metals. We've been covering it quite widely, and I'm sure as soon as we get a little bit more from them, we'll be on the podcast discussing that, Alan. So we're going to move on now and discuss the final stock of the day. Now, it's one that we have touched on, Alan, on the podcast previously, but it was probably a fair few months ago now.
Mm.
Logistics Development Group. Now, this had me scratching my head looking at the numbers this morning when we were arranging the podcast. It's had its final results out. I'll let you go into the figures. I know it's one you know quite well, and then we'll go through the numbers afterwards.
So Logistics Development Group, the share price is currently trading at 15.8p. It's been as high as 16.2p on the year, so it's just off those year highs, but with very good reason, as you're about to find out. The shares, of course, if you look at the performance over the past 5 years, they fell off a cliff in March 2020, but they'd also fallen prior to that. The company was formerly, of course, Eddie Stobart Logistics, and there was a funding issue. There was an accounting hole was identified, and an immediate requirement for some £75 million was identified, which was provided by a company called DBay, DBay Investors. And DBay set up a vehicle, Green White Star Acquisitions. They acquired half of Eddie Stobart, and of course the company continued to function. Through the restructuring in July last year, the company finally disposed of Green White Star Acquisitions following a return to profit, the restructuring, the fine-tuning, and also headed by Adrian Collins, the chairman, who's an investment veteran. He's worked previously with Lion Trust and with Gartmore and Bahamas Petroleum and others. So Adrian came in and oversaw the restructuring. Following the disposal of Green White Star Acquisitions, Logistics Development Group, which evolved from Eddie Stobart's logistics, received $120 million cash. And what that means is that the company that is there now, Logistics Development Group, basically has a cash balance of $132 million sterling at the end of the year. It's generated a cash inflow over the period of $125 million, an EBIT number last year, underlying EBIT number of $84.6 million compared to a loss of $11.3 million previously, and a pre-tax profit of $84.7 million, again from a loss of just under $8 million previously. So the company has stated this morning in its full year results, it now has no financial debt and a cash balance of $131.9 million, as I said already, or approximately 19 pence per share. And the shares are currently trading at 15.8p. So this is, I know we do find this, but this company has cash in the bank. It has, it was agreed at the shareholders meeting on 31st of January this year to broaden its investing policy to invest into companies and opportunities outside the logistics sector. So we are, the company's announced its first investment under its new investing policy. It invested $6.3 million into CareTech Holdings. And of course, this is the company that owns the care homes across the UK, which I think anyone is that knows anything about that business at all. It's incredibly profitable and lucrative business to invest into. So it's seeing a return from this. But the company's now got the mandate to progress investments into other areas, as well as, of course, logistics. In order to try to address the fact that the company's been trading at a discount to its cash per share, it's initiated a share buyback program to narrow that discount. I just see here that a company that makes the right investments and perhaps evolves or works its way into a technology position, trading at this discount with all that cash, I think is going to certainly deliver some decent returns. And um, I I was involved as a shareholder in LDG. I did sell out. Late last year. I'd gone in at about the shares were down to 4p at one stage, so I got in at that point. So I'd made a decent return on that. But I think now, given the transaction that took place in July last year, given the mandate that the company now has from the shareholders to pursue acquisitions in other sectors, I think we could be in for a very exciting ride.
So, Alan, I mean, just looking at those figures there, I think that's something we need to sort of drill down into. Of course, you know, market cap around 95 million cash that they've said in their final results of 131 million. And, of course, no debt with that.
Yeah.
And indeed, you know, this is a company that's, you know, producing EBIT of 84 million. You know, that's pretty much in line with the market cap there, slightly under. So those numbers, in the context of the wider market, are somewhat ridiculous. You know, to have cash in the bank more than the market cap, of course, you know, you could buy the company and get the cash.
Exactly.
What do you think sort of happening here? Is this something that's under under the market's radar? Do you think it's, you know, people are looking and think maybe it's a little bit convoluted, there's a lot going on, there's a lot happening in the past, maybe I don't want to get involved with it, I don't quite know what this business is? Do you think that's maybe what some people are thinking? What do you think was holding the share price back at the moment?
I think it's a combination of what has been a very complex transaction to, I think, extricate the business from the position it was in a couple of years ago. And also, the logistics sector, you know, it's viewed widely as a business that employs a lot of capital for very narrow margins. So it's not a particularly sexy sector. So Logistics Development Group, even more than Eddie Stobart Logistics, I think just implies that this is a logistics company. So, of course, there's no premium at all there for any upside from the investments it makes. I mean, the company could just stick it all into investments and, you know, see maybe a dividend return of 10% per annum, covers all its salaries and outgoings, and grows the capital that way. So you know, even there's a massive sort of gap to valuation. So at some point, the market's going to wake up and realize that actually there's an absolute diamond of a stock here. And if the investments it makes are correct, there are companies out there that demonstrate very well, despite the high fuel prices at the moment, that the logistics business, can be run very well and very profitably. So I imagine it's a combination of the fact that it's in one of the unsexy sectors, and also the confusion from the transaction previously that's got it to this point, that has left or prompted investors to leave it alone. And also the fact that the shares were much lower than they are now. And of course, a lot of investors have got in and taken profits already. I mean, I'm one of those. But certainly, you know, after looking at these numbers, I did a double take. I thought, you know, how can it be 131.9 million cash in the bank, 19 pence per share, and it's trading at, it's trading at on a market cap of 95 million. You know, it just doesn't add up. So at some point, that valuation gap will be closed. And then I'm sure the market will apply a premium to the share price for the activities that the company is now engaged in.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if, you unlock that value in the share price, you know, 19p, the company said, of cash, per share out there, with, you know, the share price trading at 16p, a huge disconnect here, Alan, and I'm sure one that we're going to be discussing on the podcast again when we either start to see, you know, developments in the business or maybe a bit of movement in the share price, you know, in line with the cash share and the valuation of the company based on its underlying activities. So just as a recap of the stocks that we discussed today, first of all was Twitter, listed on the New York Stock Exchange with the ticker of TWTR. It was then, of course, Sovereign Metals with the ticker of SVML. And just then was Logistics Development Group, which has a ticker of LDG. Alan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.